This series of Let's Make It Rain is sponsored by PensionBee, a leading online pension provider. They're on a mission to make pensions simple so that customers all over the UK can become pension confident and save for a happy retirement. PensionBee's website and app make it simple for customers to combine their old pension pots, contribute flexibly, and withdraw their pension money all in one place. PensionBee offers a range of pension plans for different savings needs, from a flexible self-employed plan to socially responsible plans like their Impact Plan or Sharia Compliant Plan. Head to pensionbee.com or download the app to get started and become pension confident. Remember, when investing, your capital is at risk. And speaking of investing, you've probably heard me say before that we are our own biggest asset by far, and that includes investing in the next generation. I wrote Cash is Queen exclusively for preteen and teenage girls to equip them with everything they need to take control of their financial futures early. It's been translated into 5 languages and is available worldwide. So grab a copy for you and a friend today. Hi, and welcome to the Let's Make It Rain podcast. I'm your host, Davinia Tomlinson. This podcast is for the rainmakers. Those women who are breaking down walls, building their own empires, defying convention and rejecting stereotypes. Women who are unafraid to have open, honest conversations about money among friends and to share the truths we've been told to keep secret. Don't forget to subscribe, share and download wherever you usually get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, then please leave us a 5-star review. Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Let's Make It Rain podcast. Today, I'm over the moon to be joined by Katie Cook. Katie is head of programming at PBS International Channels. She is a mom of 2, and that's material to this conversation. You don't ever hear me mention anybody's motherhood status, but we will be talking about motherhood during this episode. Katie is also my very good friend. Katie, thank you so much for being here today. Why don't you introduce yourself in a bit more detail for the benefit of the listeners, perhaps by starting with one of the channels that we might be familiar with in the UK. I know that rainmakers are listening in from all over the world, but a channel that listeners might be familiar with in the US and in the UK that forms part of the PBS family.
Yeah, so PBS America come under PBS in the US, but in the UK, the channel is called PBS America, and you can get it on Virgin, on Sky, on Freeview, and on Freesat. And we also have a catch-up service on Freeview Play and Amazon Fire. But also any channels that PBS launches outside of America, we run too. So we've also got a kids channel in Africa, and we did have one in Australia. And we've also got some fast channels as well on Samsung and various other services. So yeah, there's lots going on.
There is. And you're very busy.
Yes.
So let's get right into it. So, and I suppose against that backdrop, thank you so much for taking the time to sit with me this morning and have a conversation, because I've wanted to get you on the podcast for a really long time. I know that you are an avid listener, and I very much appreciate you for being such a steadfast and loyal supporter of this podcast. And we first met, for the benefit of the listeners, we first met 10 years ago now.
Wow.
Which is wild. Our
yes,
first children are 10 years old, about to be 10 years old. And we first met when we were pregnant with them during, in the UK, there is an organisation called NCT, which is National Childbirth Trust. And effectively what they do is to host community-based groups in which moms-to-be, dads-to-be, parents-to-be can come together and get ready for the birthing experience, the parenting experience. And you're basically assigned to these groups in your local area, as I say, and you have no idea who you're going to meet in these groups. It's a bit like potluck. And we were very fortunate with our group because we had 6 of the most incredible women that just came together. We didn't know anything about anyone before we came together, and we've become lifelong friends. And so that's become a really lovely aspect of our parenting experience, because it was really, really hard.
Yes.
And of course, we can talk about some of those things, but I'd like to talk about the importance of community during maternity leave, because I think prior to coming to those NCT groups, I don't think I'd given much thought to the reality of being so isolated as a new mom and a mom to be. And I know that was one of the things that came up during our conversation. You know, it wasn't just about the practicality around this is how you change a nappy. This is how you might breastfeed if you should choose to do so. This is when you might escalate a concern to your GP or the nurse. You know, all of these different things that were covered from a very practical perspective. But we also talked about some of the emotional well-being considerations too. And I think that was the first time that I'd ever really thought about it. Of course, now and in the last 10 years, there've been a lot more apps and other ways for women to engage online and to form their own sorts of communities. You know, friends of mine are big supporters of Peanut, big users of Peanut as an app, and they're forming their own, you know, NCT-like groups. But I know that lots of women also report feeling isolated and lonely in the absence of a support network. From your perspective, Katie, why do you think it's so important for our well-being to be surrounded by others who are having a similar experience during this time?
I completely agree. I had no idea what I was letting myself in for, to be honest. And I was the first of all of my friends to have children. So I just had no idea. And during NCT, there was a lot of focus on the birth and how to birth a child. And there was no real focus on us as mums and on what life would be like once we became mothers. And as you said, our group, we were so lucky. Our group of women, you were my village when my son first came along. And there was just never any judgment in our group. We were very lucky. Everyone was there for each other. We were all able to show up completely as ourselves. There was never any pretense. I remember messages to each other on the group chat at like 3 a.m., which is like the worst time when you're all feeding. It feels like forever until the rest of the world's up. But there was always someone with a funny anecdote or something to share with the rest of the group, and so much love and compassion. And we were really, really lucky. We were all very different, as you say. But having that support and that community and knowing that you could just be completely honest and there'd never be any judgment, I don't know what I would have done without you girls at the beginning. It would, yeah. Same. I definitely don't know what I would have done without you.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it? Because I think sometimes I wonder whether it's a bit like a social experiment where you throw different women together from different backgrounds, different walks of life, and just see what happens. And the chemistry and the alchemy that was generated from us coming together was so powerful. And you're quite right. I mean, if anybody were to read our group chat, they'd be in stitches, because some of the things we've had, so many highs and lows, and we've come through it all together. You know, we've had bereavement, divorce, children in all kinds of states of disarray and chaos, and, you know, job transitions, redundancies, litigation as a result of those redundancies. You know, there's been so much going on. And through it all, we've been able to show up as our true and authentic selves. We don't have to sugarcoat what we feel or what's going on. And we know that we're going to have a supportive ear from the other ladies. I just think, honestly, I wonder what my experience would have been without you all. I mean, obviously, you know, as women, we persevere and we get it done. You know, at what cost? You often wonder at what cost.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think, as you said, I think the world is a different place for mothers now. I think it's, we're not there yet, but it's definitely more open, more willing to offer that support. Whereas I feel like there wasn't that when we first started, and we were just really lucky to have each other. I have other friends that have had NCT groups that haven't been as supportive, and they haven't had that community around them. And also, we all lived in such close proximity and we were all seeing each other often, and that helps. There was just knowing that there was always someone there, someone to listen, and whatever you were feeling, someone else in the group would have felt it too. So just knowing you're not alone, because it can be so isolating at times. And my early motherhood, especially, experience would have been very different, I think, without all you lot.
Agreed. I mean, we've touched on it, I think, in this response. You touched on it, Katie, in your response about the compassion and the extent to which we're able to show up with authenticity. But I think, you know, if we were to drill down a bit more deeply, and it's of particular interest to me because, of course, with the Rainmaker Academy and the community of Rainmakers that I'm building, you know, across the world, it's really important that we find a common thread. It's almost like finding that golden thread that runs through us. And so I'm always interested in the secret sauce. When I see powerful communities, when I see powerful groups of women or people in general coming together and making real impact on one another's lives and quality of life, I always think, what's the secret sauce? So if you had to bottle our thing, our secret sauce as a little unit. What do you think it is? Because I mean, even when you think about the fact that, I mean, I've relocated, so I'm not even in the same space as you all anymore, but still there is never a time, and I miss you all too, there is never a time that I am in the UK that I won't see my girls, ever. It doesn't matter how long or short a time I'm there for. And that's because of our secret sauce. What do you think it is?
I think we're all individually really strong women. We've all got a lot of integrity, and we are all just unapologetically who we are. And I think that's really important. And we are all very different. And we've all evolved, and we've all changed.
We're so funny and quirky, aren't we?
We are, but it just works. I think
it does work.
If we were all more similar, maybe there would be more clashes of personality or something. But there isn't. I think because we are all so different, we can just all support each other through whatever we're going through. Whether we can empathise or sympathise or just offer a listening ear, we're just always compassionate to each other and what each other's going through. But I think we're all really strong, and we're all really determined, and we've all, yeah.
I love that. So, okay, so now I want to ask the question that I hate to hear women being asked. And often you'll see it, you know, these are the clips that go viral at award ceremonies and things like that. I think there was one very recently of women being interviewed and then being asked, how do you juggle it all? How do you manage it all? You know, and the reason I want to ask this question of you is that I do think it's an important question for us as women. I know that anybody could be listening to this podcast, and I encourage that because I think it's important that we're able to tap into one another's shared experience, irrespective of gender. But I think for us as women, having the conversation and learning from other people, getting those insights as to how other women truly are making it work, I think can be quite powerful, because sometimes there are nuggets that we can extract from other people's experience that we can use to fine tune what we are doing. And for you, Katie, as a senior professional with all of the pressures that we as women face and you face, and I know that your husband is part of your village, who else would you say, and of course outside of our little group, constitutes part of your village, and how do you make it work? Because, and we'll talk about this, you know, in a bit more detail, how you've managed your career, because, you know, being head of programming for such a massive network is no small feat. And yet you do that whilst having two children who are currently under the age of 10, not for much longer. They're only 2 years apart. So there would have been a point, particularly in the early days, where you had two effectively babies, and you were working and trying to run a household and be a wife and be a good friend and everything else. How do you, or did you, make it work? What are some, you know, do you have any tips? You know, what advice do you have? What works? What doesn't work? Yeah.
It's tough, and it's exhausting at times. And I'm a planner, and I love a spreadsheet, and it does require a lot of logistics and lots of spreadsheets. And Chris and I are so bored of talking logistics, but sometimes that's just what we spend our evening doing. And it was harder, I think, when the kids were younger in many ways, but it just changes as they get older. And now it's more complicated. Like, the older they get, there's more clubs, there's more sports, there's more things they're doing after school, and, you know, having to be in two places at once with two different children, and there's only one of me and one car and all of this kind of stuff. So it doesn't necessarily get easier, it just changes as they get older. It's tough. You're trying to manage it all. I'm trying to juggle everything all the time. There's this myth that we can have it all, and we can strive to have it all, but then it just means we're burnt out and exhausted. And I'm very lucky to have a village around me. I mean, my husband and I manage as much as we can between us, but we wouldn't be able to do what we do without my parents. My parents live nearby. They're amazing. They, you know, when the children were younger, they had the kids every Tuesday, and they just knew that that was their day with the kids. It was a really special bond to their relationship, but it also meant that that was a day that Chris and I, it didn't matter how late we were from the office. It didn't matter how early we had to go in because my mum and dad had the kids that day. The other 3 days they were at nursery, and I haven't worked on Mondays since I've had the kids. So I'm very lucky and fortunate to be able to A, do my job in 4 days, and for my boss to be so understanding and allow me to have that day off. I mean, it means I get paid 20% less, but you know, swings and roundabouts. You do what you can do. And now trying to manage school holidays is just as difficult because, you know, our annual leave doesn't cover the kids' school holidays, and we do as much as we can. We end up taking separate days off. The kids go to my parents often one day a week, and we do holiday clubs. But holiday clubs are only school hours, so it only works if you're working from home. But definitely since the pandemic, both mine and my husband's jobs are more, allow us to be more flexible. So we do more days from home, which allows us to take the kids to school and then pick them up from their after school clubs without that, oh, that stress of having to, I remember having to leave the office and hoping that all the tubes were running fine so that I could get there for nursery. Because if you didn't get there for nursery before it closed, you were charged like a ridiculous amount of money per minute you were late or something. And that stress, I never want to go back to that. I hated that.
It was awful.
Oh, it was awful. Yeah. Well, yeah, when they were younger, it was more difficult, wasn't it?
I mean, Katie, from my perspective, when I think back to the days of, and particularly I felt it more acutely after I'd had Vivi, who is about to be 7 in September. But that pressure of, you know, and even the guilt, I don't know whether, you know, dads listening in, please, you know, if there are any dads listening in, please let me know how you felt about it. I've had conversations with some of the dads in my personal network, but I think because of how their family structure was set up, I don't think they absorbed the guilt that my friends who are moms absorbed with regard to having to drop their children off super early in the morning in order to get into the office for an 8 o'clock meeting, or, you know, having to feel guilty about leaving the office at 5 o'clock in order to get to nursery for a 6 o'clock pickup, or as Katie has correctly outlined, you'd be fined and have to pay additional fees on top of the fact that you already feel so bad about perhaps your child being the last one left at nursery because you've dropped them off at 7:30 and you haven't picked them up until 6. You know, I think by the time my second child was born, that pressure had become so immense that I was just in bits every day I was having to go in. You know, and it impacts everything. It impacts your home life. It impacts work life. And all it takes is for one tube to go wrong. And the whole thing just felt like a house of cards. The whole thing would fall apart. So I'm very interested in what you say about the planning, the spreadsheets and the logistics, because it is boring.
Mm-hmm.
But as the Rainmakers will know, we always talk about systems and the importance of systems, because I think, you know, when you're trying to do so many things simultaneously, the only real way that it can work is with not obsessive planning, but with making sure that you've got some kind of system in place, however basic it may appear. And whether it's with you and another person or just you alone, it could be for your family, it could be for your finances, it could be for anything at all. But you want to make sure that so much of it runs in a systematic way. You don't want to every day be going, oh, hang on, who's doing the pickup, or who's doing the drop off, or are the kids with mom and dad today, or when does that bill come out and who's paying it? You don't want that aggro. We've already got so many other things on our plates. And so the system is really important, and taking the time to put something in place, which I suppose leads me on to my next question about financial planning for your household. Because, of course, really what we want to get into in this podcast is the money. How do you manage the money? You've talked about so many different things. I mean, when you become a parent, that's really when your finances are brought into sharp focus for lots of us, particularly if you've lived quite a carefree lifestyle or you've never really had to worry about so much. And of course, living in London, there's always a bit of push and pull with regards to cost of living. But it's when you become a parent that suddenly you're tested, you know, your financial planning is tested to its limit, because suddenly for lots of us, you're having to pay for childcare. And we know the UK is ranked probably in the top 1 and 2 of, you know, most expensive places in the OECD region for childcare costs. We know that it's a big challenge. It's being hotly debated right now in Parliament and everywhere else. And so how did you and Chris manage financial planning? How did you approach that in your household? Do you have do you schedule a monthly date to talk about money? Does it come up organically? Does one person take the lead? How does it work for you?
I'd say firstly, going back to your point about the mum guilt, and I mean, I hate that word, but it's definitely something that I felt more acutely especially when they were younger, it was that constant battle between if I was there for the children, then I felt guilty that I wasn't giving 100% to work. And if I was there doing everything I needed to do at work, I felt like I wasn't giving the children 100% of my time. And it was that constant push-pull all the time, trying to give everything of myself to everybody else and never feeling to me like I quite managed to do that, to do it as perfectly as I would have wanted to. But that's me. I beat myself up. I have far too high standards of myself, completely unrealistic. But you're just trying to do the best you can. And I definitely feel like as they get older and they are technically able to do more things for themselves, life does get a bit easier in that respect. And I can talk to them about things. Like when I'm trying to keep all the balls in the air, and I drop some of the balls sometimes, but I can own those mistakes and apologize to my kids. And if I, you know, like this morning, I thought my daughter's new art club started this week. Turns out it doesn't start till next week. She got really upset on her walk to school this morning because she wanted to do art club. I had to own the error. It wasn't a big deal to me, but for her, it was a big deal because she was excited. So we can't do everything. We try. But we, Chris and I, have various systems in place. You know, when the kids were younger and it was just nursery, we didn't need to have so many systems in place because it was the same every day. But now there are so many logistics, and you know, each term it changes. So swimming has changed from one day to a different day. So I've had to change everything. I've had to change the day that the kids are in after school club. I've had to leave work slightly earlier on one day to manage various things. And you need to plan all these things in advance. Chris and I need to know exactly what's happening every week. We sit down on the Sunday and make sure that we each know what our expectations of the other person are around the children for that week. Because otherwise, I've learned I used to have it all in my head and I had certain expectations of Chris, and then he wouldn't do them. And it's not his fault because I haven't communicated that. So the communication is so key between us. When we have times when like he's traveling with work or I haven't seen him and then he comes back and then it just all goes all over the place because we haven't been able to see each other and communicate, that communication is so important. And it's the same with our financial planning. My husband works in the finance industry, so he is much more open to these conversations, much more aware of what we should be doing with our finances. And generally, he is more of a risk taker than I am. I'm more risk averse. So we do generally meet somewhere in the middle. I find it difficult to prioritize that in amongst everything else. My head is so full and so busy of everything I need to do with work, with the children. And Chris is much better at allowing us to prioritize our money and our investments as well, because it's important. You know, without that, we can't provide the support that we want to for the children growing up. We can't have, you know, our ultimate goal always is our holidays. That's what we're always saving for. We're always planning for. We met traveling. My husband is Australian, so half of our family lives on the other side of the world. So that is always what we are prioritizing. That is always what we are working towards. And we just want to have that stability in our lives and to be able to provide that financial stability to our children. That's our ultimate goal. But yeah, everything needs planning. Everything needs working out.
Katie, I've got a very specific question for you around pensions because... And it's so funny, whenever I mention it, honestly, I laugh because it seems like I'm obsessed with this subject. And I suppose I am to some degree, particularly when it comes to women. But somebody said to me, I was chatting with someone in the gym the other day, and he was like, he'd listened to a podcast and he's like, are you talking about pensions again? And I'm like, have you got your pension sorted? Because by the time you finish listening to all 53 episodes of the podcast, you're going to have your pension sorted and you're going to hear my voice in your mind saying, I need to do something about my pension, because it's so important. And I think it's one of these things that we require regular reminding about. It's a thing that I think lots of us will be aware that we need to do something about. But as you know, a young woman said to me in the bank the other day when I was having a chat with her, she was like, oh yeah, no, I think I've got a pension, but I don't really know who it's with. And I'm actually not sure. Let me go and check. But anyway, I'm so young, I don't need to do anything about it. And she was in her 20s. And I said to her, you're quite right. You are a young woman. You've got so many other things going on. But I really want you to make sure that you, first of all, know if you've got a pension through this job. And if you do have a pension, just check how much is being contributed on your behalf, or at least how it works. And then when it's all set up, you can carry on with your 20-something life, live your best life, and don't think about it. But do make sure you're checking in at least twice a year and just know what's happening so that if anything has changed, you're aware of it and you're on top of it. So there's no longer than about a 6-month period where you'll be left in the dark. And she agreed to go away and do something about it. But I think there are so many swirling misconceptions about retirement planning, not least it's for when I'm old. And of course, yes, you'll be drawing down the funds in later life, not necessarily old. You'll be getting access to the money in later life, but you've got to do something about it when you're younger. So I always try to have this conversation with women just to understand, you know, to what extent is this a feature of your financial planning? And I know that you do it with your, you know, alongside your husband, which is brilliant. I think that's important. But was this ever something that you'd considered? Was it something that you had heard discussed at home among your parents? How did it work in your mind and in your household?
I think I get lots of my kind of ideas about finance and stuff from my dad. He also loves a spreadsheet. He's a planner. I'd say he's quite risk averse as well. And he was always saving. As soon as I got my first job, just after I graduated, went traveling, and then got my first job and was offered a pension straight away. His only piece of advice with my first job was you take a pension as soon as it is offered. So I have had a pension since I've had my first paycheck. He said, if you never have that bit of money, you won't miss it. And he said, and every time you get a pay rise, you get a new role, you up your pension, so the percentage is always the same. He drilled that into me from a young age. So I have always had it. I have ported the same pension across when I've changed jobs. So it's just building and building. And I also contribute myself and always have done. So I think because I've never had that money, I don't miss it. And yeah, to me, it was just a given. It was never something I didn't consider. Like, my father is now retired, but since retiring, he is now the chair of the pension board of his company. So pensions are a big topic in our household.
Oh my God, I love that.
And brilliant. It is something that that both me and my sister know the importance of, the financial planning for the future. Parents are always looking ahead. My dad's big into saving, and that financial stability was something I've always wanted to strive for and is really important to me. It doesn't sound very exciting or sexy, but for me, financial stability is vital for me, for the family, and for mine and Chris's relationship too.
Definitely. Oh my gosh, so many things in what you've just said, because I think it's the foundation for so many things that I think we wouldn't otherwise necessarily draw the correlations between. You know, the health of your relationship, we know that, you know, financial pressure is one of the biggest sources of marital breakdown, relationship breakdown. So there's that. You've also touched on the reality, the stark reality, that pensions are not sexy. Financial planning and the spreadsheets don't feel sexy. And hence why, you know, there's a whole module dedicated to the systems in the Rainmakers Academy, because I'm like, it may not be sexy, but I want you to understand it's not about the means, it's about the ends. And so the means are going to liberate you from having to worry and stress about your finances and what's happening. What you want is that freedom of mind to go and do the more exciting things. But we do recognize that pensions as a term has a bit of an image problem. I think a couple of weeks ago, I interviewed the Director of Public Affairs at Pension B. Pension B are our podcast sponsor this season. And I love Pension B. I loved them before they were a podcast sponsor, because they have done such a brilliant job of humanizing the pension experience and making it simple. You know, you talked about porting your pension across. You know, lots of us, particularly of our era, Katie, have had more than one job. And, you know, for those of us that did opt into pensions in all of those jobs, you end up with bits of pension pot in all of these different jobs. And unless you're staying on top of them, quite often when you leave a job, you're so delighted about the new opportunity, you're not necessarily thinking, oh, what's going on with my pension? You're just going into the new job. You're excited about the bonus prospect or the salary increase or the other employee benefits. And so the pension just lies somewhere in a corner, completely unloved and ignored, until such time as maybe you might get a letter from someone saying, oh, we think we've got a bit of your pension. Or you think to yourself, oh, you maybe sit down with a financial advisor and they say, well, what's going on with your pensions? And then you realize you've got these dormant accounts left in lots of different places. And so Pension B, again, have done a brilliant job of reminding people to stay on top of their pensions. They did a study recently, I think in conjunction with CBRE, that said there's something like hundreds of millions of pounds left in delinquent pensions across the UK, where people just need to scoop them up and be reunited with their pension pots. So if that's one action that any listener can take, if you're in the UK, do try and track down your old pensions, because it is so important. But then I suppose a really powerful message from your statement about what you learned from your dad is the impact that we as parents have on our children's money mindset and the things that they prioritize. Of course, I talk about this in Cash is Queen. It's why Cash is Queen is so important to me. It's my third child, because not least because, you know, we want to make sure that women and young girls are equipped with everything that they need to learn about their financial literacy before they bump into the gender pay gap and before they trip over a gender pensions gap. We want them to know what they don't know. It's important for boys too, but we know that there is a much bigger hurdle for young women and girls to overcome than boys do, at least in the current state of affairs. And so what we are teaching our children about money and the things that they just absorb by watching us and overhearing some of the conversations is so incredibly powerful. So I suppose that brings me on to another question, Katie. What would you say your two are picking up from you and Chris at home? I suppose they're seeing you with the spreadsheet and seeing you come together and plan, which is quite a powerful optic in and of itself, isn't it?
But it's so different these days. Like, you physically don't see money. Like, we pay for everything on our phones. True. You order stuff from the computer. So I don't think they have that same awareness because they don't actually physically see the money. I remember having money, pocket money, and then you'd go and spend it and you'd know how much you spent. So they have cash that they get from birthdays or whatever, and they'll have in their little purses, wallets, and they'll go to a zoo shop and they'll go and buy another cuddly toy. But I think that helps them because they want something. They come to us, they want it. And I'm like, well, you've got your money. If you want to go and buy it, you can go and buy it. And then they'll look at how much they've got left. And then they work out whether they really need it or not. But we definitely need to do more with them about understanding the value of money. I don't think they understand it well in the way that I feel like I did as a child. But I don't know what my parents did. It must have just been subliminal, the messages that they were giving us, but it's definitely something that Chris and I need to work on. I think that they're very aware that we work hard and therefore we get our money, and that enables us to do nice things. I had this little job on the side at Topshop in the town where I went to university.
Did I work at Topshop? No, I worked at Miss Selfridge.
I worked with one of my housemates and one of the guys I knew from university, and we had this great shift. It was the 4 to 8 shift. So you're only there for like an hour while the shop was open. You only really had to deal with customers for an hour. And then we were those really annoying people that would rearrange the shop in the evening. So you'd come in the next day and trousers wouldn't be in the same place and jeans would be in a different place. And we just used to have the music on and have a great time and rearrange Topshop. And you got this amazing discount. You got like 25% off. So most of my wages would just be spent in Topshop. And then each quarter you had to have an outfit which you would wear for work. So yeah, basically all my wages went on Topshop. But anyway.
R.I.P. Topshop.
So I've still got clothes that I wear from Topshop.
I know. I miss Topshop greatly. Yeah, disastrous.
But as I've matured I've earned more money, I've learned to treat myself where I can. I would never have treated myself before if I ever had money left over at the end of the month, it would always go in a savings account, which is good. It's got me to where I am now. But I remember getting my first bonus, and it was like literally a few hundred pounds, and I didn't spend any of it because I was like, I need to save that. And as I've got older, I've learned that however small, it's my money that I've earned, and I deserve that. You know, I treat other people, and I buy stuff for the kids, but I don't treat myself. And as I've got older, I've learned to do that more. And a really good friend of ours who works in finance, actually, he gets a bigger bonus, but he said when he gets a bonus every year, well, not every year, but whenever he gets one, he will set some of that money aside and make a big deal of treating himself and the family to really show that his kids what his hard work has achieved him, and that he's rewarding himself for that hard work and really teaching them the value of that money. And Chris is really good at doing that. He is really good at making a point of treating us if he ever gets a bonus, and doing something specific with it and making memories with it, and something that the kids will really value and really you know, the kids understand that we can only do this because it's something that we have worked hard for. So yeah, that's definitely something I'm trying to do more in life, and to show the kids more that I deserve to be treated for the work I do. So, but that is hard, I think.
There's so much to unpack in that though, Katie. I mean, let's almost taking them in reverse. The point about, and this is why, you know, what we learn from our friends as well, and being able to, it's important that we're able to have conversations like this. So for people that don't necessarily have these conversations in their personal network, they can tune into the podcast and learn from our experiences. But your point about, you know, what your friend shared, it's so important, isn't it? And I think, you know, I don't know whether it's a function of men thinking differently from women. It could just be him as a person. But the fact that he is very intentional about saying, I'm carving out a portion of my bonus and I want to demonstrate to my kids, I want to demonstrate to the family, I want us all to almost share in, you know, the joy of me having worked hard enough to have generated this money. But there's such a powerful lesson in there for the children as well. Again, when we talk about children forming their earliest money habits by the age of 7, this is part of the experience. And we don't necessarily, our conscious mind won't necessarily be aware of that fact. I imagine that there are lots of us prior to me working in this space and really digging into the impact of financial literacy or illiteracy for children, I wouldn't have been aware of the fact that we form our earliest money habits at such a young age. And now being aware of that fact, I'm looking at my soon-to-be 7-year-old, I'm looking at my 9-year-old and going, gosh, I wonder what you've already learned about money from me and how can I inject a bit more intention into what I'm teaching them. But there is a lesson in that for the children. And actually, both Chris and your other male friend, they are describing how, even though they may or may not necessarily think of it as a money lesson, there is a money lesson in that for the next generation, which is a powerful one. But you also touched on the fact that we can be real martyrs at times, can't we? As women, and even more so as mothers. But whether or not you're a mother, we're such martyrs sometimes. And it's like, you know, when we're watching, I bet you if you were talking to your sister or talking to your bestie, and they were saying, oh, you know, I've just got this massive bonus at work, you'd be over the moon for them. You'd be like, right, let's get your glad rags on. We're going out for dinner. Let's go to a spa. Let's go and do something that we really want to do. Let's skydive. Let's whatever. Whatever the thing is you want to do. You'd be like, we're going to do that thing. And they'd be like, oh, you know, but I've got to pay for the gymnastics or I've got to pay for the ballet lessons. And you'd be like, yeah, but we're also going to do something to celebrate you. And we don't often do the same thing for ourselves because we become martyrs. We become like, oh, you know, well, it's I've got to put everyone else first before myself, or it's not right, or I'm going to do it next quarter. And so, you know, for you in saying, actually, I've had to learn to reward myself, mm-hmm. powerful. Because your daughter needs to see that, and your son needs to see that. This is not something that is specific to one gender. Your whole household, including Chris, need to see you taking time for yourself and thinking of yourself as worthy of investing in. Because we shouldn't be downtrodden. You're always so like, if you know Katie, you'll know that she's always so elegant and put together, right? You'd never think that she would ever be saying, "Oh, you know, I don't want to spend that on myself." She's always totally put together, popping lipstick, beautiful hair accessories, great dresses. The same style has been passed down to her daughter. And I think they probably got it from Katie's mom, actually. When you see the three of them together.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Intergenerational, with the collar blocking and beautiful accessories, all that. But it's such an important lesson that we recognize that as women, we are worth being invested in. We are our own biggest asset by far. And so we have to invest in ourselves in order to be able to invest in anyone else.
Yeah, I'm nodding a lot. That's everything you've just said. And I think it's, I mean, I've got one of each. My eldest, my nearly 10-year-old is a boy. And then I've got a daughter who's 7. And I think it's really important, like you said, for both of them to see. And it's something I have really had to work on with me to not be that martyr, to realize that I am my happiness, my, you know, that investment in myself is just as important as the time and the energy that I invest in everybody else, you know, in my children, my parents, my sister, my friend, you know, if we, you know me, Dad, but I'm a perfectionist. If I decide to do something, I'm going to commit 100% to that. And I give a lot of myself to everybody else. I am getting better at it, but I need to work harder at investing that time and energy and effort into myself as well. But I do find that difficult.
I mean, to your credit, to your great credit, the evidence of all of that time and energy that you pour into other people really shows, myself included, we really feel the love from you. We feel the effort and the dedication and the commitment that you throw into everything, that you pour into everything that you do. But we want you to feel that love too, because it really is magical, Katie, you know, that glitter that you sprinkle all over us. It really is important that you sprinkle some over yourself as well, which brings me on to my next question, which is something that I have long admired about you. Truly, I love it so much. It's your running. And it's not because you are so obviously fit. And as I say, Katie's super svelte, super whatever, blah, 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 like amazing. So we're not going to talk about her snapback post babies, because this is not a podcast about that. But Katie is an avid runner. And the running is nothing to do with, at least not from my estimation, it's nothing at all to do with your physical aesthetic or vanity.
No,
it's about, it's for your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about that, because you have always taken the time to run from when your first child was a baby, perhaps months
old.
Yeah,
so I've always run. I did a marathon the year before my son was born. I won't be doing a marathon.
Oh my
again,
gosh. I feel like we need to pause and do a round of applause for the marathon a year before Luca was born. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was that long. It's long. I won't be doing one of those again, but it was wonderful and I love it. And I have always run, but I always do a half marathon every, like early spring every year. As I said before, if I'm going to commit to something, I'm going to do it. So I even did a half marathon in during the pandemic. There were no half marathons, obviously, on. So I planned my own route that ran past my sister's house, and my sister and my brother-in-law and my nephews were cheering me on from the window. And then I got home and my kids had made me their own medals, and it was wonderful. But if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Running, for me, it's a non-negotiable. I go for a 10K run every single Friday morning at 6 a.m. Wherever I am, whatever the weather, even if I've been out the night before, I will always go out, because for me, it's really important for me mentally. Like you said, it's okay, obviously it has physical benefits, but that's not why I do it. It's my space. It's my headspace. It allows me to feel stronger and to feel, it gives me more energy and it makes me a more patient person. I'm in a better mood after I exercise. And yeah, it's my priority and I love it. I really love it. Like, I exercise every morning as well on the days I don't run. And it's that carving out that time for me. So I get up before everybody else has woken up. It's just me. I work out or I go for a run and I love it. I would be lost without it. I definitely got more into it during the pandemic because it was the only space and time I got. So I definitely think that maybe it was coinciding with me turning 40 or the pandemic or a combination of the two, but it has definitely become a bigger part of my life in the last 3 years. Yeah, sure.
I mean, it's one of the things, as I say, that I admire so greatly. There are so many things that I admire you for, but I think it is, with all of the misconceptions, I think, about, or preconceptions perhaps, about women and motherhood, and also the fact that it is so at odds with perhaps your natural inclination to prioritize everybody else above yourself. This could be just one of those things that falls by the wayside. We hear reports all the time of women who previously took the time to go dancing or, I don't know, create beautiful art, you know, in their spare time, or read or write or whatever it is. And then when they become moms, saying, well, actually, I just didn't have the time anymore. And then they realize 20 years later, right, the children have grown up and moved out. And all of those, you know, I've lost every shred of my being because I've devoted it to my children. And you might, and of course, you're proud of what you pour into your children, but what's left for yourself? And so I think for me, it was as much about me admiring your sheer discipline, because sometimes the things that you would post, I'm like, oh my God, Katie, it's rain, it's sleet outside. Why are you running? And you would be so dedicated. And as somebody that is a bit of an energizer bunny anyway, I have to move all the time. I have to work out most days. So I always knew the impact, and I've been going to the gym since I was 17, 18. So I know how I feel if I'm not able to move my body in whatever capacity, and the impact of that on my mental well-being. But I think it's the dedication and the discipline, and also because I know you and I know how much you do elsewhere, I think I just admired you for taking that time out for yourself, because I know it's such an important part of your being.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right. I think so many other things that I did before have fallen by the wayside, but this is one thing that I can't, because I am a better person when I exercise. I'm a better mum. I'm a better wife. I'm more focused. I mean, Chris will attest to the fact I've been injured a couple of times and I haven't been able to exercise. And I am hell to live with when I exercise.
Yeah, because nowhere to release, right?
No, I get very frustrated. And I have less energy. Like the more I know it seems weird, but the more I exercise, the more energy I have, definitely.
Same. It definitely fills you up. And so I think the lesson for anyone, another takeaway outside of the pensions one, for anyone listening, whether you're a mother or not, if there was something that you used to do that always used to spark joy, because I've been really interested in this idea of adult play, and not in a sexual way, although it can be if you want, but this idea that, you know, the things that you lose, for, you know, as you become an adult, we think that, you know, we've got to give up childish things. And actually, those are often the very essence of our being. What are the things that really used to make us feel good in our bodies, feel good in our minds? If there's one thing that you have abandoned because you view it as something that should be consigned to your childhood play box, take it out of the play box and see whether it still works for you. It could be you're running. It could be painting, as I say, so many other things. But I do think it's important that we have our one thing and we carve out that time just for ourselves. Absolutely. So thank you for being my exemplar on that, Katie, and reminding me on the days when I feel like, oh, I don't have the time, I can't be bothered. And then I go into my martyr phase to kind of drag myself out of it and go, no, Dav, you need something for yourself.
And it's important for our kids to see that too. I mean, my husband is
definitely,
he does just as much exercise as me. We have to coordinate the days that we're out the house doing something. He cycles and swims. And I think it's important for them to see the joy that that gives us. And both of my kids are really into their sport. My son does cross-country running. He's competing for his school tomorrow at a race. And the joy that they get from that. My daughter loves her ballet and she's really excited to be doing an exam this term. And I think that seeing the joy they get from it, but also the rewards they get from the hard work they put in, is really important. It's a really important message that they are just gaining from watching us, which I think is really, really important.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're coming to the end of our conversation. But before we conclude, I want to get a bit more into your personal money management and some of your experiences over your time from being a young woman to date. Can you share a money win and a money mishap that you're happy to divulge to the Rainmaker community?
It's probably actually the same thing, because we bought our first flat together, my husband and I, literally just as the market crashed in 2008. It took so long to go through that we put the offer in and it was accepted and everything was going through. But by the time the sale actually went through, our flat was worth less. So it was a complete failure in that point of view. And then we sold the flat 5 years later to buy a house and didn't make any money whatsoever. So the value ended up going up to what we had originally paid for it, which in London is unheard of, really. You know, everybody's like, you know, investing in property, it's the best thing you can do. So I would say that was my biggest money mishap. But then on the flip side, we then bought a house, and we bought the house right at the bottom of the market. We never would have been able to afford it if the market had been carried on as it was. So actually it all evened out for us in the end. Although we lost or didn't make any money on the flat, as you would have expected, we've now made money on the house that we live in now. And we were able to buy a house that has been able to grow with us. You know, we were then had money to extend it. You know, we bought a normal three-bed house, terraced house in East London. It's got a tiny garden, but we love it. And we've been able to extend and grow, and it suits our family and it's perfect for us now. So we wouldn't have been able to do all of that if we hadn't have had that failure in the first place. Mm. So, yeah, they're kind of two of the same thing, really.
Brilliant. And then what does it mean to be a wealthy woman to you, Katie, given everything that we've discussed? And we know that, you know, wealth manifests itself in a variety of different ways, from financial to mental to spiritual. What does it mean to you?
Oh, it's tough, isn't it? For me, it's, I think, more about having that, your kind of physical and mental health and well-being, but also to have community and friends and family around you. You know, I'm very lucky to have my family nearby. And even though my husband's family lives on the other side of the world, my mother-in-law comes over every year and spends the summer with us. You know, we have that support, we have that love. I've got friends that I can rely on that will always be there to support me and for me to support them. But I'd be remiss to say that all of that isn't aided by having some kind of financial wealth. But for me, again, it's not sexy, but it's that stability. It's the not having to worry. That's what we're always striving for, to not have to worry each month. Oh, how are we going to pay for the mortgage? How are we going to do this? You know, neither me or my husband have flash jobs, but we've got stable jobs. And when we were in our 20s, you know, I left a good job in a big company where there would have been prospects, but I was bored and I wanted a challenge and I wanted to do something for me. And I joined a startup at 29 in a small company with only three other people. And it was a challenge, and it was exciting, and I could take those risks then. And you know, I was lucky it paid off. And now it's a wonderful job that I'm still in. I've had two children while I've been in that job, and it supported me through that, and it allows me that flexibility. I have a wonderfully understanding boss who knows that, you know, I will want to make all the kids' plays, but on the flip side, I will then come home and I will work in the evening to catch up on anything I've missed. So for me, it's having that flexibility, that financial security to be able to do everything that I want to do for my family, and to have that support and that trust. Like my boss completely trusts me. He knows that I'm going to give 100% to my work while also giving 100% to the kids. And that is tough to manage, but it allows me to kind of achieve, like you said, that kind of spiritual, mental wealth that you feel outside of money. Does that make sense?
Definitely. But I am also really glad that you touched on the reality that whilst we don't, you know, we would never say money buys happiness, but I do think it's an important theme that we return to, that money certainly takes away strain, it takes away stress and some of the worries that can then lead to a much poorer quality of life than you might otherwise have. So we do want to be realistic about it. You know, being able to achieve wealth and wellness in the absence of financial stability is incredibly challenging. We know that money in and of itself cannot necessarily bring us the wealth in some of those other ways that in the end have incalculable benefits. So thank you so much for that. Yes. And so my final question, given this is a podcast about making it rain, is, you know, obviously I am privileged to meet and have conversations with so many incredible women doing outstanding things. And you are one of them, Katie. It's been really lovely having this conversation with you. And I hope that on your run, you can listen to yourself and not cringe, because I know people often say, oh gosh, I couldn't listen to it, Dav. And I'm like, please listen, because it's brilliant. Okay, Katie. So for my final question then, as you know, this is a podcast about making it rain and some of the ways that we've effected transformational change in our own lives. Can you share an example of when you have made it rain in your life and why it's made you proud, and we can cheer you on?
So if I look back to something I mentioned earlier, I left at 29, I left a big channel, big company that I'd worked with since I graduated, to join a startup of only three other people. It was quite a gamble for me, quite a risk, but I was excited by it, and it's paid off. I'm still working for the company, and it was a great move for me personally. But 2 years into the job, Chris and I were looking to sell our flat and buy a house, and at the, you know, committing to a big mortgage. And we realized at the time that, oh, at some point in the future, we want to have children. I don't want to commit to a mortgage that if we are lucky enough to have children, I won't be able to afford with a, you know, if I'm not earning any money on maternity. My company didn't have a maternity policy. We were so new. So I had to have that really difficult conversation with my boss. I had to go to my boss and I had to ask him for a maternity policy. So not only am I having that really difficult conversation with him, I'm also telling him, by the way, I want to have children. So it was a really, really difficult conversation. He was amazing about it. They devised a maternity policy that, well, I was going to say that worked for everyone, that worked for me. I'm the only person who's ever used it, and I've used it twice. But it enabled us to commit to buying this house because I knew that I could therefore afford the mortgage that we were going to get. And I've had two children. I've taken two separate years off, but I'm still working for this company. I still put everything into this company. And I think that self-advocacy was really important. And it was a really difficult conversation to have. But the support I got from my boss was really encouraging and, enabled me to have the life I've had, but also enabled the channel to carry on as it is. So, yeah, it's something
I love that, Katie. That's a, oh my gosh, that is a true rainmaker power move, because I think there's so much awkwardness in that, isn't there? Because,
so
of course, it predates you being pregnant.
Yeah.
So it's you having to say in advance to someone outside, it's quite an intimate conversation to have to divulge something personal that you're discussing with your husband and planning for with your husband, with your boss, and to let them know, this is what I'm planning to do. And we've heard so many horror stories elsewhere of, people, even during the interview process, women being asked questions about their likelihood to have children. You know, I've had experiences where, you know, going to interviews just as an engaged woman, you know, being asked very inappropriate questions about, you know, when I'm planning to have kids and all this sort of thing, or, you know, whether I was familiar with the maternity policy, you know, again, presumptuous, because you're assuming then that I might want to have children. There's so much that goes into it. And I think, you know, even just shining a spotlight on the reality that women face, because no man would be going into an interview having been recently engaged and being asked questions about, you know, when he wanted to start a family. So the idea as a woman that, you know, this is an additional hurdle that we have to overcome, and we hope that we're going to have, you know, really supportive employers. But there is something quite powerful in there as a message for employers too, actually, in that your loyalty and commitment to the company as a result of them being so flexible with you and accommodating for you, not out of the goodness of their heart, but because they recognize Katie is an asset to this company. We want to retain her. When you consider how many women companies all over the world are losing after we've gone off and had children because they make it so rigid and inflexible for us to return, this is a really happy story. And one that really demonstrates your own, as you say, your own self-advocacy and your ability to stand up for yourself and say, you know, I really want to work here, but this is what I'm planning. You know, can we work together on this and getting a really positive outcome? So I love that for you.
Thank you. I'm very happy.
So now, Katie, my three quick fire questions. So first thing that springs to mind, please. So what's one money lesson you learned early on that you swear by?
Oh, it had to be save, plan. I suppose however little it might be, just try and set aside some money each month, like investing in that pension really, really early on. Like if you've never had the money, you don't miss it. Yeah, always.
Love that. Number two, money is no object. What are you blowing the budget on?
Oh, always a holiday. Always.
Where
Chris
is
and I
going?
Are literally always planning our next holiday. Well, we've
and always
just,
amazing holidays too.
Well, and but I think meeting, traveling, and having half your family on the other side of the world. Yeah, we've just booked to go to Australia for Christmas, and I can't wait.
Oh,
it'll be amazing. Yeah, to see all the family, it'll be wonderful.
And then my final question: the book, podcast, or discovery that changed my life is.
Oh, I'm a big podcast fan, as you know. Oh, yeah, the one I listen to religiously and the one that's really helped me is the Elizabeth Day How to Fail podcast.
Oh, my gosh. You introduced me to her podcast. And
yes,
I love it.
Did I? So I am
brilliant.
I am a perfectionist and always have been, and I'm very hard on myself and put a lot of pressure on myself. But it's really taught me to own my mistakes and to learn from them and to stop beating myself up. But it's also taught me a lot in how I raise my kids as well, and to own when I mess up with them and to apologize and to show them that it's okay not to be perfect and to get things wrong and that it's okay, and yeah, that it's okay. It's taught me a lot about myself. It's helped me change, but it's also really helped me open my eyes into the way I raise my kids, definitely. So yeah, if you haven't listened to it, it's worth listening to.
I love that point, Katie, because, you know, just to wrap up, I think you know, when you have children, it's like having these tiny people walking around with mirrors glued to their body. Like, so every time you look at them, you're like, oh gosh, I'm seeing myself. Because they force you to confront who you actually are. You see yourself so clearly through their eyes. Sometimes it's so cringy. Or sometimes, you know, particularly with my girls, I see them mimicking me. Or, you know, whether it's how I put on my makeup, or, you know, trotting around in my high heels or whatever it is. And it's so endearing. But equally, some of my facial expressions, and everybody that knows me knows that, you know, how animated I am and how dramatic. So in my eldest, some of my facial expressions, and she looks so much like me, and I think, oh God, she's learned that from me. So you're quite right. I think as parents, you know, being willing to own our mistakes, but also be willing to apologize to them when we get it wrong.
Yeah. So important.
I think, yeah, it's so important, so powerful. So thank you. That's a really happy message, powerful message, if not happy, for us
to end on talking about the kids. It's what brought us together. And
it did.
What introduced us to each other. And yeah, I learned so much from them. They encouraged me to be a better person and to learn more about myself. And I mean, they're just constantly entertaining, aren't they? They're wonderful.
I know, our little sunbeams and terrors at the same time. But we are eternally grateful to them for bringing us together. And so cheers to us on another decade to come. We're celebrating 10 years this year and I'm really excited. So looking forward to our celebration in the summer. So, Katie, thank you so much for your time today. Where can people connect with you if they would like to stay in touch?
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking to you today, Dav, as ever. Oh, where can people connect with me? I'm on LinkedIn. Not that I check it very often, but you could find me on there.
So you can check out Katie on LinkedIn if you'd like to stay in touch. And thank you for listening. And Katie, thank you again for your time.
My pleasure.
Hi everyone, Davinia here. I hope you've enjoyed today's episode. If any of what you heard resonated and you'd like to find out more about how Raincheck is helping women all over the world build sustainable long-term wealth, then visit our website at raincheck.com and join the mailing list for more commentary, tips and opinion on how you can start taking steps to leveling up your financial well-being today. You can follow us on social media at Raincheck, and don't forget to share, like, rate, review and subscribe. See you next time.